everyone, I'm Lisa.
And I'm Nick.
And you're listening to It Takes Two, the podcast where two people take two movies with the same plot or premise and watch and discuss them.
In this episode, we're covering off Dead Poets Society from 1989 and Mona Lisa Smile from 2003.
Yeah, this is one, I don't know if I've seen this compared a lot, but it's one I've seen both these movies before.
They're the same movie.
Yeah, I thought they were very similar. Shocking. I was wondering, because you hadn't seen Mona Lisa Smile before. You had seen Dead Poets Society,
yeah,
right?
years ago.
So I really wanted to know, did you think that I correctly assess these as two very similar movies?
Yeah, they're, I really liked Mona Lisa's Smile. Like, rewatching Dead Poets Society, I was just like, nothing's changed. Like, both these movies are set in the 50s.
Mm.
And there's very much this, Dead Poets Society basically sums up every single issue with, like, and you could call it elitist, but it is very much, like, exclusive private school sort of mentality of this idea that there are four key tenets to their school, which is, like, honor and tradition, and I can't even remember the other two. Do you remember what the other two were?
Excellence is one of them.
Excellence. What's the fourth one?
I don't remember.
It was honor, tradition, excellence, and something else. But it is very much like this idea that nothing can go outside of the norm, because it is all about tradition and this concept that, like, you, something works, so therefore never change it, even though the times, the society that these people are in are changing. And it is very much, especially with Mona Lisa Smile, the sort of the boom after the end of World War II in the United States, and the bizarro society that sort of came out of it, of this, let's sort of live like it's 1920s, even though technology and rights and all of these things are slowly changing, to the point where you get the 60s and you get the 70s, which would have been the children born of these sort of elitist school kids. And it is like, looking back at it now, it's just like, wow. It's like they're on the verge of, isn't a word.
Yeah.
They're on the verge of, like, having rights and having, like, unique thoughts, each to their own.
Mm.
And societies, and not even just society, but the tradition of their forebearers, their parents, the educators of the time are like, no, go back in your fucking box.
Yeah.
Like, you, the society is the box that we all live in.
And appropriately for both of these movies, the fourth tenet we couldn't remember was discipline.
Yeah, yeah.
just very much what they're about. Yeah, I'm going to caveat right here at the beginning and say that in looking up just trivia and facts about Mona Lisa Smile on multiple platforms, the topic that came up the most is the criticism it has received from alumni of that school, because apparently it is not remotely historically accurate to what that school was like, and it was actually quite a progressive school for the time, and they weren't taught, like, poise and etiquette like they are in the movie. They were taught, like, actual feminist subjects.
That's why you're going to make them about fictional schools, folks.
I know,
Dead
yeah.
Poets Society is a fictional school.
That's the thing. It's like, it would have been so easy to just either find another school that was like the finishing school situation that they had in this movie, or make up a school. You can still film it at that school.
Yeah.
But you don't need to set it as the school that it is. Because, I mean, Dead Poets Society is filmed at a real school. Yeah, or mostly, not entirely. There's some soundstage, like the classroom, I think, is a soundstage. But, I would believe that at that time and that period that it's set, there probably were schools like the one depicted in the film. They just, for some reason, chose to film at one that was not like that. So it's a weird choice. But yeah, just getting ahead of that in case there's, you know, people who know that kind of stuff who are listening and are going to complain that we're talking about it as if it's the reality.
There is so much of our culture here, 2025, that evolved from the early 20s, the 30s, the 40s, the 50s, and the 60s.
Mm.
There is so much culture that is like one of the point of topics to really date this recording is this controversy about jeans and jeans.
Oh, okay.
And like, where did jeans come from, Lisa?
Like
the popularity of jeans. Do you know what jeans, do you know what Levi did, like Levi, the guy who invented jeans, what they were?
Oh, no.
They were work clothes.
Oh, right. Okay. I thought it was going to be worse than that.
No,
okay.
They were work clothes. It was like Dickies brand were like literally you're out, you're working, mm-hmm. like, and it became a fashion thing because like that's how trends take to the point where like the standard cool guy outfit is like blue jeans and a white t-shirt.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, it doesn't, like, to the point where people are like, see photos of people wearing blue jeans and white t-shirt and sunglasses and like, that guy's clearly a time traveler from the 90s. It's like, no. It's just, that's how people were dressed.
Yeah.
That
is a simple style that has been in style for a very long time.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just, it's such an interesting, because like, you go through the history of where the American public education system came from, and you realize it was literally about saving children's lives, because otherwise if you're like a child, you're like, cool, I don't have anything to do. Well, better get in that workhouse, kid.
Yeah.
Better get in that factory work, like your father and your father before him.
I think these movies are very similar.
That's why we're comparing them on our podcast, when we take two movies of the same plot or premise.
I think people know Dead Poets Society more.
Yeah, it's a classic. There's a lot of named actors that you would recognize even if you didn't know their names.
You can definitely say the same thing about Mona Lisa Smile.
Mona Lisa Smile is crazy with the amount of actors that you could be like, I know who that is.
Yeah, like, yeah, and only a couple of them were like big at the time. Yeah. Like Kirsten Dunst obviously had, you know, was a pretty well known child actor in the 90s and stuff. And Julia Stiles had been in a lot of things at this point. But there's quite a few. I was surprised rewatching it that Jennifer Goodwin is in it and plays such a huge part, because when I watched this first, would have been maybe 2004, 2005, I rented it from Extra Vision and watched it with some friends.
Makes sense.
And I had never heard of her, which makes sense because this was her film debut. Mm. She's been in a lot of things since and is most known for playing Snow White in 7 seasons of Once Upon a Time.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Judy Hopps.
And that's what I was going to say. And Officer Judy Hopps in Zootopia and soon to be Zootopia 2.
Spoilers.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's the trailer is out, right? So, so that's a... So obviously her career has skyrocketed. And, you know, and looking up the film, because I did... Because I've seen both these films before, I did go and look at the trivia and stuff before we rewatched them. And I was like, oh, I didn't remember Jennifer Goodwin was in this. And then I watched it, when we were watching it, I was like, well, she's got, like, a huge role in this movie. And I just did not remember that at all. Maggie Gyllenhaal, who would have been in a few things at that stage, but wasn't super well-known. She's definitely more well-known now, I would say. Kristen Ritter is in it. I don't think she speaks a single line. No, but that's, she's just, she's
in the background.
Jessica Jones. And there's a few other girls in the class who are recognizable faces that you'd have seen in, you know, 100 other things. So it's interesting. But, it's very much, obviously, Dead Poets Society, so they're both set in the 50s. Dead Poets Society is, you know, more distinct, it's just kind of generally about, you know, these elitist schools or whatever. And the pipeline of people going through the school and the big careers they're going to have.
Going to Ivy League school, Ivy League colleges.
Yeah, whereas...
And the fields that they're, like, you know, no, you're going to go, you know, and being having your own father threaten you.
Oh, yeah.
And be like, no, you can, if you don't do what I'm going to tell you to do, because, you know, I probably fought in World War II. You're going to go to military academy and then go to Harvard to be a doctor. And the kid's like, but it's another 10 years of my life. Yeah. Like, that's an entire lifetime.
And then Mona Lisa Smile, it's about these girls who are
going to marry said people.
Yeah, essentially. But it's this concept of, like, these are maybe the first generation of girls, or one of the first generations of girls who are actually getting to go and have a college education.
Yeah.
Because that is the, you know, not a huge difference really, but it is a big difference between the two, is that the Poet Society is about a high school, whereas Mona Lisa Smile is about a college.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, the idea that they're getting this education, but then they're going to just do nothing with it. Become housewives, because that's what's expected. But really digging into them, both movies are about parental pressures, largely. Like, these, for not all of the girls, like, it's made very clear that, like, Julia Stiles' character, for example, you know, you're supposed to see, look at what her character is doing and think, oh, she's throwing away her life to do this. And then she's like, no, I know who I am. I know what I want. I have these two dreams, but this one is the main one that I want to pursue, and I'm doing this for me. But then you also have, and the characters that I think can be most compared in these films, even though they react to the teacher in different ways, are Kirsten Dunst's character, Betty.
Yeah.
And Robert Sean Leonard's character, Neil.
Yeah.
Who both have this overbearing pressure from a parent who has planned their whole life for them, to the point that they both have moments where the parent is saying, you're going to do this thing, and they're like, I don't really care about that, and they're like, you're going to do this thing.
Yeah, yeah.
It's important. And then they have a very different, like, they both go through some horrible stuff and then have a very different outcome at the end, which we'll get to a bit later, I imagine. But yeah, so it's about this kind of societal pressure and parental pressure on people to live out the lives that their parents want to live vicariously through them, essentially. Because Neil in particular is his, you know, there's a kind of a throwaway line where he's saying that he understands his family aren't as wealthy as the other boys in the school. And, you know, his father sacrificed a lot to put him into the school so that he could go and have all this career that his father wants him to have.
Yeah.
But then they're also about these teachers who come in who think a different way to everyone else who's teaching in the school, don't want to follow the traditions, don't want to follow, you know, by the book teaching, are very passionate about what they do and about art and creativity, because you've got an art history teacher on one hand and a, is it English? Is it just poetry or English? An English teacher, right?
I think he's an English teacher, yeah.
General English teacher, but he mostly focuses on poetry. Who come in and in teaching these students who are largely, you know, very intelligent, very academically focused, and don't necessarily care a lot about the artistic side of things.
Yeah.
And in teaching them about the artistic, you know, subject that they're teaching, they're also teaching them to have their own thoughts, to have their own perspectives, their own voices, to you know, not just regurgitate what someone else has said, but stop and consider things that they wouldn't otherwise consider, and to kind of break away and become a person. And it's very much coming of age in that way, that these are people in their late teens, potentially early 20s for Mona Lisa Smile, who are for the first time being given agency, I guess. It's like the first time that an adult has come to them and said, hey, you can be who you want to be, you can do what you want to do, you can pursue these things, you can have your own opinions, you don't have to just follow this path that's been laid out for you.
It's very interesting because it reminds me of two things. The first thing was that show, that documentary show you watched, the one about where it was following the kids.
Oh, yeah, 7 Up.
Yeah.
I love that show.
And there was huge difference between the children who were, like, at public school Yep. And the ones that are private school, where they were, like, listing off which schools they were going to next.
Yeah, for anyone who doesn't know this series, it was started in the 1960s, and it was I think it was supposed to be a one-off initially, and the concept was they were interviewing a whole load of seven-year-olds and saying, based on this child's socioeconomic status, we have a prediction for how their whole life is going to go.
Yeah.
Essentially. And it was the, you know, give me the child and I'll give you the man, or whatever is the something along those lines was the slogan. And they got a whole load of kids across different backgrounds in the UK and interviewed them, all 7 year olds, and interviewed them about, you know, just general questions about their life and their schooling and their family, et cetera, et cetera. And then, you know, we're predicting, you know, this is how this child's life is probably going to go based on the kind of school they were in, what their parents did as for their jobs, what their, you know, socioeconomic background was. And also, like, it was really interesting, even at 7 years old, that the, like, the kids who would be the equivalent of the kids in these, in especially in Dead Poets Society, were 7 years old and saying, well, I'm in this school, and then I'm going to be going to this school, and then I'll go to here to study law, and then I'll go to, you know, and then this will be my job, I'll be a barrister, and then maybe I'll get into politics or whatever.
Yeah.
Whereas then you had, like, you know, kids who...
The regular children.
Yeah, the public school kids who were like, I'm going to be a race car driver, or, yeah, you know, whatever, or just, like, you know, off the wall different things. And then you had, like, these kind of middle, or, like, well, working class kids who were like, well, I'm probably going to go work in a shop, or I'm probably going to go be, you know, a mechanic, or whatever their parents were doing, yeah, you know. And it was so fascinating to watch that, and obviously fascinating to make it. And they went back and interviewed all the same kids 7 years later and did 14 up. And then since then, they've done it every 7 years. I can't remember when the next one's supposed to be, but the guy who was making them has passed away since the last one came out.
Right.
So I don't know. But a lot of the kids, I was going to say, that the last one, I think, was 63 up, so they're so, or maybe they did 70 up before he passed away, but at the very least, the next one is either 70 up or 77 up.
Yeah.
It's not, they're not kids anymore, but it's been interesting to see how their lives have actually gone.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting that they keep coming back for it, and some of them, like, there have been some that have dropped out, and I think at this stage, I think one of them has passed away as well, one of the kids. But it's just fascinating, and it is very reminiscent of Dead Poets Society,
yeah,
to look at these kids who were so sure of how their life was going to go. And, you know, and you hit them at 14 up and 21 up, and they're on the path they said they were going, yeah, to be on, because it was all planned out for them.
Yeah, it's a very interesting concept, because you rarely see that massive gap, right? And then you understand that, like, when we're talking about, like, these movies in particular in American politics, American history, you can understand why the schools, because that's what the movies are basically about, is about a new teacher with new, fresh ideas coming in, especially a lot younger teacher coming in and being like, you know, open your mind, like, here's something outside the box.
Yeah.
I could spend the next, you know, half an hour talking about, you know, the situation that we ended up in because of this concept. Where you are basically lied to your entire life because of advertising. And it's very interesting how many campaigns, like, why we've mentioned the genes thing of, like, how many ad campaigns actually shaped the future of humanity.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the psychological tricks that companies play on you, the fact that, you know, the Coca-Cola is with everything and, you know, associated with everything and is literally on every corner of the planet. To the point now that the, you know, the human beings contain microplastics from all the plastic bottles we produce. How the diamond industry didn't exist until someone ran an ad campaign and then all diamonds were valuable now. It was all made up by humans because all they are is crystalline carbon and literally worthless to any other industry.
Mm.
Yet there's a specialty put on it because of a singular ad campaign, which was, if you give her a diamond, she'll say yes. Which, why I mention it, is very much how sort of the romantic side of both of these movies play out, of just this concept of men being overly infatuated based on a simple interaction,
mm,
to the entire lives of these girls, even though there's a teacher trying to pull them away from this prison that is being this housewife sort of ideal, which is, you know, free to everybody. There could be, you know,
yeah,
I'm not saying that it is a prison. I'm saying that
I think
being forced into it by society, oh, yeah, is a prison.
But I think also you're touching on a point there, which is that the teacher, Catherine, played by Julia Roberts, does see it as a prison.
Yeah.
It's not for her. She, yeah, doesn't want to get married. Or she, I think she brings up at one point she was engaged and the person she was engaged to went to war.
Yeah.
And then when he came back, he was different and they parted ways. Yeah, and where she is in her life, she doesn't see herself getting married. She's in a long distance relationship, and so is Robin Williams' character in Dead Poets Society, mm, though it's only barely touched on. But she has no intention of marrying that man. And she is very much, even though she does respect to some extent the school and what people are doing there, she is very much this concept of like a free spirit. And who is very artistic and very passionate and wants to bring that out in other people. And she's seeing the potential in these girls. And she's correct about Betty being forced into the, or like,
oh,
being,
yeah,
put into this track to like, you must get married at this age, you must do this, blah, blah, blah.
All the, but other characters, she's
not right about Julia Stiles' character, yeah, whose name has slipped my mind. I've written them all down like 100 times because I want to remember. Joan, yeah. And I think she has to learn from that as well, that while marriage and the housewife life isn't for her, not everyone who is a housewife and not everyone who gets married is doing it because they've been forced into that box. Like, it's not a prison for everyone.
Yeah.
But she's very much viewing it, when she comes into that situation, as this is the end of these people's lives if they get married.
It's like the, it's hard to say without being, I have no issue with the what's referred to these days as a trad wife trend in social media, of a type of person who wants to get married and have a household that they look after and maintain and be a mother and raise children, because it is technically a biological need, or otherwise it would have been like 6 people instead of 8 billion of us. You know, people are free to live their lives. That is the one true freedom we actually have these days, is you can make your own decisions, even if you sacrifice other things in your life to do them. Betty, Kristen Dunst's character, is such an interesting turn, because the twist in her life, especially throughout the entire movie, is so, not heartbreaking, and it's just, she is the one who wants to be in the box. She is very much the one who wants to not do anything other than this.
Well, this is the thing, is that
they, and it blows up completely in her face.
Yeah, but they really, it's, I think they do a kind of a switcheroo. They do, it's like an illusion.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What they do with Joan and Betty.
Yeah.
Because they make you think,
Joan wants to go to Harvard, Betty wants to
Yale.
To Yale.
So they make you think Joan wants to go to law school and become a lawyer.
Yeah.
And they make you think Betty wants to be a housewife and that's all she wants. And the real fact of the matter is, Joan would love to go to Yale, but, yeah, her big dream is is to marry Tommy and to have his kids.
Yeah.
And to be a wife and mother and take care of them. And that's what really is fulfilling for her.
Yeah.
And you can see that, like, the whole way through, that she's genuinely in love with Tommy. Like, there's no, you know, whereas Betty, who we're supposed to believe wants to be, you know, a wife and wants to follow in her mother's footsteps, do exactly what her mother did. You never see any loving interactions between her and Spencer.
Yeah, Spencer, spoilers obviously for this movie, is always going to New York for a meeting.
Yeah, yeah.
Where in reality, when they actually see him, he's cheating on her.
Yeah. And she knows it.
Yeah, yeah.
The whole time, she 100% knows it. Because she has a throwaway line where she says, where her mother is like, oh, he's very busy, and she's like, and she says, he can lie enough for himself, I don't need you doing it for him, or something like that. But the switcheroo is that actually, the reason that Betty is so against the teacher, because this is why I compare her to Neil, and the thing is that Neil embraces Keating's teachings immediately, whereas Betty just instantly rejects them, and you see suddenly towards the end of the movie, you see that the reason she's been so adamantly rejecting that is because that's what she wants and knows she can't have.
Yeah.
And then, you know, there's her mother tells her she can't get a divorce when she like gets proof that he's been cheating on her. And you know, again, it's a parallel, and this is we are going to talk about something triggering here, and it will be in the show notes, and it's a spoiler for Dead Poets Society. In both cases, you have Betty and Neil deciding that they want to do this thing that goes against the plan of what their parent has in store for them. And the parent doubles down on, no, you must do this. And they reach a breaking point. And in Mona Lisa Smile, it ends up being a positive.
Yeah.
Because what she does is she files for a divorce in secret. And then she goes up to the teacher, to Catherine, and says, I would like your help to get an apartment. I'm going to move in with, I'm going to, you know, share an apartment with this other girl in the class, who she's butted heads with a little bit throughout it, because she's living the life that she wants, you know, being free. And she's going to go to law school and maybe even to Yale.
Yeah.
She just goes, I'm done. I'm never, you know, living this life that I've been told I have to live is so miserable for me that I can't live it. So I'm leaving that behind and I'm doing what I want to do. Whereas in Dead Poets Society, you have Neil realizing that he's never going to get to live the life he wants, that he has to do what his father says, and that his father will never listen to him or understand him or know what it is that he feels or wants, and he takes his own life.
Yeah.
And it's horrible.
And it's not even on the top of that. It's sort of... obviously, spoilers at the end of both of the movies, but in Mona Lisa's Smile, there is heavy criticism all the way through of the teaching style.
Yeah.
To the point where the next year, because there are so many people who have signed up for her class, they are like, well, you can teach it, but we have to check off everything you're teaching.
Yeah.
In Dead Poets Society, the Dead Poets Society, which is the thing inside the movie, which is the group of boys, you know, talking poetry to each other in a cave. Oh my God, scandalous. they end up having to sign confessions saying that it's all the teacher's fault because the school, society, and the parents aren't going to take the blame for a boy ending his own life.
Yeah.
And for those who know for a fact that in New Zealand, suicide in young men in New Zealand is at a terrible level.
Yeah.
Because of exactly the same thing, because of societal pressures, because people are overwhelmed.
Yeah.
I think Australia, which I normally don't agree with a lot of their politics, mainly because it's about, you know, denying the existence and denying the individualism of their native peoples, and, you know, the fact that they've got, you know, detention camps, just not in Australia. this concept of banning social media for under 16-year-olds is such a good idea.
Yep.
Because, one, the entire of the internet is filled with pornography, and it is not good for the developing brain of children. It's been proven in a study, because it also brings unclear expectations of the first time that these young people will be having sex with each other. And it's very disturbing of the fact that, like, schools are now literally talking about consent and having to teach consent as part of sex ed.
I mean, I don't think that's disturbing. No, I think it's good.
I know it's disturbing to the fact that they had to start teaching it because people were, like, saturated with pornography.
I think they should have been teaching it all along.
Oh, yeah, yeah, 100%. This is the thing,
and it should start much earlier than that. The concept of consent, not sexual consent.
Yeah.
But there's so many people, and especially girls, who are conditioned from a very young age.
Not to have... I know exactly what you're saying. Yeah, sorry, I'm interrupting.
Not to have bodily autonomy, is that what you were going to say? Yeah. I was going to say to understand that if an adult wants to hug you, kiss you, whatever, you have to let them do it.
Yeah, yeah.
If an adult wants to touch your hair, squeeze your cheeks, give you, you know, a kiss on the cheek or you know, whatever, you're supposed to accept that and be like, okay, the adult wants to do this and I must let them do it.
Yeah.
To the point that you don't realize, as a young person, as a teenager or preteen or, you know, a youth, don't realize that you can say, no, don't do that. Yeah. No, I'm not comfortable. Because you've been trained your whole life to believe, well, this is just something I have to live with. So consent should be taught from a very early age.
Yeah.
To be, you know, and the problem is educating adults. Because adults, because you will absolutely get adults who are like, oh, but I want to hug the child, so why can't I? No, the child should have their own ability to decide whether they want to hug you or not.
Yeah.
If a child is not comfortable being hugged, not comfortable being kissed, not comfortable having their cheeks pinched or whatever, they should be able to say, no, I don't want that.
Yeah.
And that is the basis for consent. Because if you teach children that from a young age, hey, your body is yours and you can say no if someone wants to hug you, if someone wants to kiss you, if someone wants to, you know, whatever, you can say, no, thank you, and have that respected is the important part. That's the part you have to teach the adult, is actually respect it when the kid says this. Then when they're at an age where they're, you know, potentially going to be participating in sexual conduct, they know to respect their own body and they know to say, you know, they know what their comfort level is. And they can say, no, I'm not comfortable with this. Yes, I am comfortable with that. Can I do this? Can I do that? And then at that stage, you don't even need to explicitly teach sexual consent. But, it still should be taught. Reinforced. But, it's consent is very important, not just in a sexual context.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry.
I've completely forgotten what my point was.
You were talking about Australia, porn.
Yeah.
Online, all the horrors. Because, I mean, I was on social media earlier than 16.
Yeah.
And I feel like I have turned out okay, but I also feel like what was on social media when I was 13 is not the same as what's on social media nowadays. The internet was not as big a place. There was not as many malicious actors out there trying to, you know, reach out to children. There was not as many avenues for those people to do that.
It's one of the scariest ones, and I won't mention who this happened to for their own privacy, but they were taking a nap and they woke up because their child was looking for things in their room while they were asleep. Because someone in a Fortnite lobby had, because it was filled with children, because only children and, well, I'm not saying only children and, but like there's a lot of people who are playing Fortnite to talk to young kids, not to play the game. this is kind of the same thing with open servers of Minecraft. And there was a competition, I say that with air quotes, of who had the longest, whose parents had the longest credit card number.
Oh, no.
So this person woke up because their child was trying to find their credit card to tell an entire public lobby their credit card number.
Yeah.
Because children are idiots. And, yeah, it really comes down to there are so many negative factors that are around that you, as a parent, if you have kids or are planning to have kids, cannot control. And the best thing you can do is educate your children, and you have to educate them in a way that schools aren't doing, because schools are set up with, here are factors we have to give to said Ministry of Education, how many people pass English, how many people pass maths, how many people pass science, how many people pass, you know, physical education,
mm-hmm.
what are our test scores, what is the percentage, what does it yep. mean, what is a median, like, who, you know, demographics, gender, ethnicity of the students, that sort of thing all goes into the big giant melting pot of, and then we share it all with our fellow people in the world. It's like, as a kid, you're just like, why the hell did I have to do a beep test? Like, you know, did you get those in Ireland?
What's a beep test?
You didn't do beep tests?
What is it? Just tell me what it is.
So every time it beeps, you have to run from one end of the basketball court to the other, and you have to get there before the beep starts, like the next beep. So you've
only wouldn't have done that.
Yeah, yeah. So it's a little, and like, did you ever have to like...
I got out of 6 weeks of PE with a broken toe.
Nice. This was multiple years. Like, we did it once a year. I was pretty sure it was once a year. I don't like
that.
Doesn't
sound good.
There was one of them where you had to put your feet flat on a board and then reach forward as far as you could.
Okay.
And they measured how far forward you could go.
Oh.
There was all sorts of weird, like, height, like, how hold. It was all sorts of weird biomechanical testing of just, like, literally the teachers, like, writing down...
That's weird.
...statistics of you. Education from the people who invented public education is very interesting, because obviously there's these stories about private education, which is a very, very different, and it's even the difference between, like, being denied to go to university is a thing that most people don't deal with, because it's just like, you just pay, you know, you get the minimum you need, say 120 points or whatever, 180 points or whatever it is, and pay the money, and then you're in.
Mm.
And if you drop out in the first year, well, that's on you.
Mm.
Like, the concept of, like, oh no, they didn't like the fact that I only did ballet and was the editor of my school paper. I'm never going to get into the school.
Yeah, there's, like, I think the American schooling system across the board sounds terrible.
Yeah.
If
you were part or haven't
been a part Americans, of please reach out and tell us, like, is any media about that reflects American schooling systems, any of it correct? Because it all seems awful, and I'm sorry.
Yeah, it all, because it's always, like, the high school movies, and then it's like they're going to go to, like, that's, like, the whole thing from, like, Greece onwards, like, even... Orange County, like, there are so many movies of so many different genres that are literally about kids finishing high school.
Yeah, Booksmart.
Yeah, is Dazed and Confused.
Yeah, I don't know. I went to a public school.
Yeah.
And my brothers went to a private school.
Yeah.
And the only real difference was that... Oh, I was going to say something horrible there. Ooh, yeah, there is something horrible I could say, but let's not go into that. The only tangible difference education-wise, it's not even education-wise, was that they just really wanted boys to play rugby. And neither of my siblings played rugby, so they, didn't care about them.
I thought you were going to mention the fact that, like, the year you had what I would refer to as sex ed, like, several of the class...
Were pregnant. Yeah, I mean... I'm sure the boys from the private school had something to do with that.
Oh, yeah.
You know? The pregnancy didn't happen in a bubble. I went to an all-girls public school that was across the road from an all-boys private school. I think there was a connection between the pregnancies in my school and whatever sex ed was happening in the boys' school. I did go to the boys' school for a class that they didn't teach at my school. There was a couple of those. I did applied mathematics. Like a nerd.
What do you apply it to?
Real life.
Oh, okay.
It's like, you know, if you're swimming across a river and the current is going this far, like, you have to, you know, figure out
your drift,
velocities and shit. And
you're drifting. Can I ask you a question? I'm giving you shit, but when was the last time you swam across a river?
I don't.
Yeah.
I also didn't do great in applied math. My teacher, he sadly passed away. My teacher in applied maths used to always give every time there was an example, when it was like, and you have to throw something, or this thing is floating across the river, or this thing gets shot out of a catapult, he'd always say, for example, a small child.
Yeah.
It's like, what is the angle that you would need to throw the small child to get them across the river? And it's like, okay.
I don't think you should be throwing children across
rivers in general. Yeah. It would always be a small child. It would be his example object in any context.
You're under siege from the English. What is the length of the arm of the trebuchet you have to construct to sink their battleships before they arrive?
Some of the girls in my school also went to that private school to do carpentry, because that was something that they taught over there that they didn't teach in my school. So maybe slightly more pretentious classes was the difference between the private school and the public school.
They also
did cricket, I think.
I went to a mixed public school.
Yeah.
I did not enjoy it very much.
Yeah, I didn't enjoy it either.
I left school because I was working and didn't have time for school because I was earning money because I was flatting at 17.
Mm-hmm.
I then went to Polytech and worked my way through Polytech and then was a qualified chef at 18.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I know for a fact, like, this is a true story about a friend of mine who I used to live with. He did his first year at university and he was living with a bunch of other guys who were also in their first year of university, and they all worked part-time jobs, and he decided it wasn't for him, so he left and went full-time in his part-time job. He ended up becoming a store manager. He ended up meeting the store that he was the manager of, ended up being the first to do something in New Zealand, to the point where he had a photo op with the then Prime Minister, Helen Clark. And after those years of university, there was a big giant global recession.
Mm.
So all those boys who we'd lived with were now men and now had graduated university and were stuck working their part-time jobs, flipping burgers and stacking shelves and pumping gas, because the economy was in the fucking toilet.
Mm-hmm.
And they couldn't find jobs in their respected fields that they'd got massive amounts of debt for.
Yeah.
And it hasn't gotten any better, like, honestly. Yeah. You know, we talk about every political party comes in and goes, I'm going to fix the economy. It's like, well, no, you're not, because you're actually the problem why the economy's broken. The fact that we all listen to these elitist people who went to these special schools, who didn't interact with the actual general public, and always sent their kids to private school, and they've all been groomed into these positions. You very, very, very rarely find an individual like Donald Trump, who came from a business background to become a politician,
mm-hmm.
who's, guess what, folks, not doing a better job than the other pricks have ever done. It's a very interesting situation.
I was going to say something very political, and I shouldn't, because... No, I can say it. I was going to say, yeah, see, Carl Diefenbacher? You can't run Wellington like a business. That's not how politics works.
The fact,
showing my own local politics.
Yeah. The fact that organizations who are in power want to stay in power.
Oh, yeah.
And why it mentions it back, why it's relevant, why we're talking about it, is back in these movies, you're talking about, you know, the overarching bad guy, so to speak, isn't really society. It's not in the movies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's the time era. Wow, we can talk about it for hours. Post-World War II America.
Yeah.
The real overarching, the axe that is above the head of our sort of main characters is the faculty. It is the administration. It is the parents of these kids who are telling their kids what to do because they have this plan for their own children.
Yeah.
And it really shows because, like, you go to the generational damage that is done over years, and it's like, you know, I remember asking my mother why she didn't go to university.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what she told me, Lisa?
What?
I understand it now because I'm no longer a child and have, you know, the ability to go over parts of my childhood and be like, oh, that makes sense within context, even though I didn't understand it then.
Yeah.
There was a lot of fear-mongering in my mother's household when she was younger.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was the whole Cuban Missile Crisis. It was, you know, the one minute to midnight nuclear apocalypse.
Yeah, that's not just in your household.
Yeah.
That was global.
Yeah, that was global.
Yeah.
And that was the reason stated by my mother why she never went to university, is because it was like, well, what's the point? We're all going to die.
Oh, wow. My mother was one of four children.
I know the story.
And essentially, it boils down to they could afford to send one of them to university.
And the one that went to university
is very wealthy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
and has no kids and worked for, I don't know if I don't think he still works there. A major very well-known household name company globally.
Yeah.
But it was very much that her, and so it was the third of four children was the one who was most likely to succeed at university.
Yeah.
And so her and the brother just below her basically went into the workforce and helped to pay it forward to their brother to go.
Yeah.
Which, you know, is something that sometimes, you know, that families might have to do, depending on many situations. But my mom went to university when I was a teenager.
Yeah. There's still time, folks.
Yeah, absolutely. 'Cause at that stage, my older brother was in university at the same time as her. I think he was a year ahead of her.
Mm.
I was towards the end of secondary school, so I would have been maybe 16, 17 when she started, and I was in university when she finished.
Yeah.
And then my younger sibling must have been 12 or 13 then at that stage. So it was, you know, we were all kind of old enough that we were getting ourselves to and from places, and she could go and get her degree. Yeah, and she did. You can do it.
I realized to myself very rarely of like how much I've actually accomplished because of social media. I'm not blaming social media for my own faults. I'm just saying it doesn't help when you see young people driving Ferraris because they said something stupid and therefore it went viral and then they got their own podcast and crypto coin and then ripped a bunch of their fans off and ran away with the money.
Oh, yeah. Is that our plan?
No. Unrelated. If you go to our website, ittakes2.co.nz/buy the IT2 coins. They're trading...
IT2 coins.
Yeah. What was I going to say? Like, my dad didn't have a mortgage.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't buy his house. My mother definitely not. I moved away from a small town. I moved to the big city, the capital of New Zealand, and worked and was able to eventually, you know, meet someone who I care about and share hobbies with, and purchase a home together. Mm. And, you know, if you'd asked 17-year-old me where they think they would have been now,
mm-hmm.
I would have given you a completely different fucking answer.
Oh, yeah. I mean, my answer I don't think would have been New Zealand.
Yeah.
Never mind the rest of it.
And it's such an interesting fact, because, like, you're looking at these movies, you're looking at the time when they're set, when they were made, the message that is portrayed in them, and you realize what's going to happen to these kids and what's going to happen to their kids. It's a really, really, really quite interesting. Like, I'd never seen Mona Lisa Smile, and genuinely, it's more engaging of a movie. It's the least rated, right?
Yeah.
That's why we watched it first.
Yeah.
Yeah, no.
It's also lesser known. I feel like everyone knows Dead Poets Society.
Yeah.
It's a very well-known film. And it's a good film.
Yeah, never get wrong. Like, some of the cinematography is gorgeous. Some of the things in it, there are some very captivating moments. The Oh Captain, My Captain moment is, like...
And great performances.
Yeah. None of the acting is hammy or terrible. Yeah, or,
and also most of the teenagers are actually played by teenagers.
Teenagers, yeah.
There's one of them is 10 years older than the rest of them, but you wouldn't know it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like Mona Lisa Smile. I think, I guess valid criticisms of it not being historically accurate to that particular school.
Yeah.
But I still think, you know, I think it's accurate to some schools of that era. And I think that, you know, even if it's not completely historically accurate, it still has a point to be made even today in this, you know, this is how societal pressure affects us. This is what happens when you try and plan someone's life out for them.
Yeah.
You know, this is why it's good to learn to be a person at that age.
Yeah.
You know, if you're, you know, because you should have freedom. And I am, you know, we're talking about how we wouldn't have predicted where we've ended up in life. But, like, I never had pressure from my parents to follow a particular path. And I'm so grateful for that. Because yeah. I know people who did. And, you know, and I genuinely had a friend in school who was really intelligent, doing really well in school. And her mother, who was on her second marriage, would regularly tell her that her priority in life needed to be to marry a rich man.
Jesus.
And that was in the 2000s, yeah. I believe, I've lost touch with this person over the years. I believe she is now a biochemist.
Yeah.
You know, she did go and do something very sciencey in study, and I think that's what she's doing. I'm not aware of her having gotten married in the meantime or anything. Not that I necessarily would know, but I've, you know, other people in that friend group, I've heard about their weddings and things. And I also know someone, I have a friend who, because my younger sibling is a doctor, and when they were, you know, planning to go and study to be a doctor, I talked to this friend of mine who was a doctor, who was qualified, like, recently, like, there's a just the right age gap between myself and my younger sibling that, my friend who's the same age as me had qualified as a doctor, like, right before my younger sibling was going to study. And it was just like, you know, what advice would you have? And she said, make sure they really want to do it, because I didn't. Wow. And now I'm stuck with this life.
Wow.
and that is horrible. And it was very much, and I knew a lot of people my age who, if they were getting certain grades, the expectation was that they would go study medicine.
Right.
Because the medicine courses in Ireland are the ones that you need the highest grades for, essentially.
Yeah.
And they did introduce, I think my year might have been the first year to do it. And it was because this was happening, they introduced an aptitude test to go along with applications to medical school. So you had to go through a whole other test to prove that you have empathy, essentially.
Wow.
Because there were so many people going to become doctors because they were getting really high grades and that's what was expected of them.
Right.
But they didn't care about people. They didn't care about patients. They didn't want to be doctors. And they're going into the workforce and you end up with a whole workforce full of doctors who don't give a shit about people.
Yeah.
Now, I think this friend would be a really good doctor. I don't know if she's still doctoring. I know she's had multiple children at this point. And her husband is a lawyer. So very much the kind of family that these films would have enjoyed. But it's always stuck with me that, like, she studied medicine, went through the whole, 5 years of it or whatever, became a doctor, and did it all because she was getting good grades and that's what people expected her to do.
Yeah.
And I think that's so, I don't know, there's just something kind of horrifying about that to me. Because I didn't, it would never have crossed my mind to be like, I'm going to do this thing that other people want me to do.
Yeah.
I just put down, when I was applying for courses, I was like, these are the things I'm interested in, to the point that my application made no sense, because I think my number one choice, which I got into, was animation, which I have done nothing with since I left college, because yeah. It turned out not necessarily for me, but I did go and get, that's the only thing my mother did slightly pressure me into, and I appreciate it, was she said, 3 years into a 4-year degree, I wanted to give up, and she was like, just get the degree, get through it and get the degree, because then at least you have it. But, my I think my list on my, what I applied for was animation, and then visual communications, which was like a graphic design type course, and then theoretical physics, and then computer science.
Right.
And I only put 4 down. You could apply for 10. And I was like, well, I don't want to do any of these other ones. Computer science is my backup.
That's bananas.
So I had two art degrees, basically, and then theoretical physics. Because I was like, that at least sounds fun to me. Go in, and I don't know if I got the minimum requirements in physics in the end for theoretical physics. Because I got a C in physics in the end. But I think I just had a really bad day the day of the exam.
Mm.
And that happens. And then your whole life can be upended by an exam. Thankfully, my actual choices weren't dependent on that. But I just applied for the courses I thought were interesting. And then I went to, And I, like another person I know, who I don't want to be naming people, very much, and you'll know who I'm talking about, I think, very much did in college what their parents expected them to do, to the point that I think their father wrote some of their essays for them.
Yeah.
got that degree, did a lot with it. And then had some life experiences and went, actually, I want to do what I want to do. Went back and did a degree in something they're actually interested in. And now is working in that field and loving it.
Yeah.
And wonderful. Like, that, very happy for that person and what they've done. And I think, that's the solid outcome for the characters of these movies. Is that either they get to do what they want the first time around, or, down the line they go, actually, I'm going to go back and I'm going to do the thing I want to do. That's what happens with Betty in Mona Lisa Smile. And it's, to an extent what's happening with the boys in Dead Poets Society, because of the influence of these teachers.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they've had someone talk to them when they're still in a kind of formative years that are going to decide what they do with their lives and say, you can be your own person. You can think for yourself. You can make your own choices. You can have your own perspective. You can do what it is that you want to do.
Mm.
And I think it's very important to have people like that in your life. Whether that's a teacher or a friend or a family member. And I think that those are important lessons for young people to learn, that you can have your own thoughts and your own opinions and do what it is that you want to do.
Gonna move into some trivia?
Sure. Have we actually talked about the movies enough? I feel like we've just this is like, an oops all tangents episode.
If you want to join our Discord or get on our mailing list, you can do that via our website at takes2.co.nz. And you can let us know how you feel about the trajectory of the last two podcasts have basically gone the same exact way. I think we're in our own little groove, and I'm assuming, like, because we've had different, you know, wavelengths of thought over the years that we've been doing this, I think, you know, eventually we'll go back to a place where other episodes are different to these ones. And
yeah, I don't want to go back to a point where we're just rehashing scene for scene what happens in a movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that's not what I want this to be. I want us to be able to have these discussions.
Yeah.
But I do think that we also do need to be comparing the movies. I mean, I think we have. We've compared some characters, and we've talked about, you know, the overarching themes in these movies that make them similar. And I think more than anything, it's a feeling in these films that is the same.
Yeah, yeah.
I think very much it's... Yeah. I think there is a general... I wouldn't consider Mona Lisa Smile to be a rip-off of Dead Poets Society.
No. Even though there was some of the criticism.
Yeah, I think that it is... I think that it definitely touches on similar themes, but I think it's different enough. You know, it's not focusing on, you know, these boys and this is what you have to do. It's very much focusing on, like, taking a lens of, like, feminism, both in the sense of, you know, women can do what they want to do, but also the, you know, being a housewife is valid, and so is pursuing academics, and so is, you know, pursuing artistic stuff. And they do both have a scene, you know, when the teacher is going to be leaving, and it's back in the classroom of sorts, and, you know, you have in Dead Poets Society, the Oh Captain, My Captain scene where they all stand up on their desks.
Yeah, well, not all of them.
Yeah, but a whole lot of them. And then in Mona Lisa Smile, I would say the kind of comparable scene is, you know, she has talked about how she had a talk previously about Vincent van Gogh and how he was not appreciated in his lifetime because people thought his paintings were childish. But then, you know, as time went on after his death, people realized that actually, like, you can see what he was thinking, what he was feeling in the strokes of the brush, and it's all very individualistic. But nowadays, we've turned it into everyone can have a reproduction in their home, and here's a paint by numbers where you can fill, you know, paint within the lines to be Van Gogh. And what the students have done is they have taken those paint by numbers and painted them in their own way instead of following the numbers, which I think is really nice. Symbolic, scene to be like, hey, we have heard you, we appreciate you, you've had an impact on us, and we're going to do things our own way, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway, trivia you were asking about. I didn't take down a lot. One thing I had, like, trivia to compare between the two, which was that for Mona Lisa Smile, the lead actors were all put through a finishing school for 2 weeks before filming, to kind of get in the mindset of what that school was like. And for Dead Poets Society, the kids were given books about what kids the age of the students would have seen in the cinema, listened to on the radio and things like that, and given them, like, idea of what exactly kids from that era were actually taking in and you know, what they would have been seeing and what their lives would have been like. So I thought that was interesting that you know, very much the Mona Lisa Smile cast were like, this is what the school would be like, whereas Dead Poets Society, it's like, this is what your external lives would be like. Also, Mona Lisa Smile... the only other thing I took down, which I thought was fun, because it did decently at box office, but not fantastically, but it actually opened at number 2 in the box office.
Right.
But the problem is that the movie it opened behind. So Mona Lisa Smile had a budget of $65 million.
Yeah.
And an opening weekend, opening at number two in the box office, it made $11.5 million. And box office total, it made $141 million. But the movie that was first at the box office was The Lord of the Rings, The Return of the King, which made $1.1 billion. Yeah. So, bit of a hard competition there.
Yeah.
So I just thought that was funny. By contrast, Dead Poets Society had a budget of $16 million and made $235.8 million at box office, which is pretty impressive.
$25 million of that went to Julia Roberts because she was like the highest paying actor at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was her highest paycheck at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. She got, so $65 million budget and $25 million, that was Julia Roberts' paycheck. So that's fun. Peter Weir, the director of, I almost said Good Will Hunting. That's not the movie we watched. Dead Poets Society. He chose to shoot the film entirely in chronological order.
Which is a very weird way to do a movie.
Yeah, but it was to really actually capture the development of the relationship between the boys and how they responded to Robin Williams as Mr. Keating. And he also, which I don't think I wrote down here, but he also, once Neil's character dies, he just kept Robert Sean Leonard away from the set entirely and wouldn't, so that the boys could like actually feel his absence. That, like, oh, he's just, we just don't get to see him anymore. He's just gone. The scene where Ethan Hawke's character Todd goes out and cries in the snow was done in one take. Because it was originally written as a shot, as an interior shot inside, but then it started to snow and they were like, actually, it might have more impact if we do it outside in the snow. But this, when they, by the time they got everything set up, the snow was already starting to stop.
Yeah.
So they were like, okay, let's, we got to do this in one take. And then Ethan Hawke nailed it. And then the other thing I took down was that the character, the teacher, is actually based on a real person. So the original script was written by a guy named Tom Shulman, and he based it on his experiences at the Montgomery Bell Academy in Nashville, Tennessee, and his inspirational teacher, Samuel Pickering. I did see quotes from Samuel Pickering where he said, like, no, I was just doing nonsense for the fun of it. Like, this, the character in the movie has a point to it and is actually trying to inspire these kids. I was just having fun. So I thought that was funny. But yeah, that's about all I've taken down, I think.
Cool.
Yeah, I genuinely really enjoy both these movies.
It was a fun little setup you did.
Yeah, I've been looking forward to watching these two, I think. And also I'm glad that, like, we watched them and you agree that these are very similar movies.
Yeah.
Because we could have watched them and you could have been like, what are you talking about? This is a totally different thing. But yeah, I think it's, also, character-wise, I thought that Jennifer Goodwin's Connie and Joss Charles's Knox were kind of a comparable character, in that they're both interested in love and also are, like, you know, to the point that Knox is writing a love poem and being mocked for it in class, whereas Connie and Mona Lisa Smile is kind of being told by the other girls that, you know, she's basically unlovable and no one's gonna want her or whatever. And to the point that they both have, like, a kind of a scandally thing where they're into a person who then they think is with someone else, and, you know, so there are some weird little maybe coincidences. It's hard to say whether things are coincidence when one movie came out almost 15 years later and the first movie was very successful and very well known. It's like, is this a nod to that? Or but it is handled differently, I think.
If you've enjoyed this episode, or a previous episode, or possibly the next episode, how will you know? Share this episode with somebody. It really helps. It really does help.
Yeah, we do appreciate when people share episodes that they enjoy.
Just DM somebody directly, no context.
Mm-hmm.
Great, thank you.
And let us know what you think of this episode, and if you think these movies are the same.
Yeah.
If you're listening on Spotify, you can comment there. Or like Nick said, you can join our Discord or find us on social media. All of the links are on our website, ittakes2.co.nz.
Thank you for listening. We'll catch you, hopefully, next time.
Goodbye. Bye-bye.